Society in the 21st century. This Wednesday, September 4, in focus, here on Power 102, empowering you.
Good afternoon to you. Good to be here with you. After a full day of programming, looking at all kinds of issues that we want to place before political leaders and, and their parties, you know, when the election time comes, we are not too sure what we should ask of them, and they set the agenda, and we have to respond. We, meaning people in the electorate, no matter where you come from, as part of that electorate. So we've been going all day looking at some of those issues, and Aisha, how has it been going?
It has been awesome, listening to the views and opinions of those who are vying for political office, some of them, and of course those who are in position to give a say on the issue.
Okay.
I'm learning a lot.
So do you think that we will get to the point where politicians will have to listen, politicians and their parties will have to listen to what members of the electorate have on their agenda rather than pursuing their own agenda?
I think it would be wise.
Okay, wonderful. Wise. It's a wise statement, Aisha.
Thank you.
Okay, so this segment we are going to talk with representatives of a number of groups in the society, people who have their own demands, some of them conventional, some of them non-conventional, according to how the society has pushed them into a corner, or in fact even looked at them in a kind of way. So we start off, we have a number of people to come in over the next couple of hours, but we start off with two persons. One person on the telephone line, Angelique Nixon, who is a director of the group known as CAISO. Good afternoon, Dr. Nixon.
Yes, good afternoon, Tony.
Not hearing, we have to fiddle a little bit with the equipment. Are you hearing me now?
Yes, I'm hearing you.
Okay, so you heard the introduction, and this is where we're going to go from. We also have in the studio, we have Katie. She prefers to be called Katie, and she is a representative of the Queer Corner Caribbean. Welcome to the program, Katie. All right, so let's start off with you, Dr. Nixon, because I know you have a tight time schedule, so thanks for giving us some of your time. What are some of the things that, from your group's perspective, that you want to place on the agenda of politicians and political parties in the campaign for the 3 elections coming up into the near future?
Well, I think the most important things are continuing to work to fight against discrimination, that members of the LGBTQ plus community experience in the workplace, in terms of housing, in terms of access to education and other goods and services. So our focus has been for some time really pushing for the amendment to the Equal Opportunity Act, so that it would include protection against discrimination on the basis of LGBTI status. We've also opened and included in that campaign to say that age should also be included, as well as health conditions.
Now, somebody listening into the discussion may say that, okay, there are still some concerns and still some stigma associated with groups like yours, but they feel that, especially with the movement in the law last year, was it, that sufficient space has been created for individuals and for groups in the community, and they may even say, well, what more do you want?
The court case and the judgment from last year, we also are dealing with a lot of other issues in our communities because of homophobia, transphobia, sexism, and, you know, these things don't go away because the law has changed. We still have members of the community, especially those most vulnerable, who experience discrimination on a daily basis and experience acts of violence and experience not being able to access their human rights from going to the hospital to make sure you can get services, or going to an employer and seeking employment, or traveling, or just being in public spaces.
Okay. We've been joined by two other persons who are going to participate, but let me go to Katie. Katie, as we said, represents a group, Queer Corner Caribbean. Is there a similar correlation between the experiences that have been articulated by Dr. Nixon and your group, the members of your group?
Well, we work closely with Dr. Nixon and Kaisu, so we do have shared vision, and we are all trying to tackle the same issues of discrimination, harassment, violence that is, you know, done against our community.
Mm-hmm. And what of people who say, well, they take a moral position on these matters and say that it's in the stars, or it has been created by the Creator, that mm-hmm. people should be relating to each other in the quote-unquote traditional kind of manner. How do you respond to such situations, both KD and Dr. Nixon?
Well, I'll start. First of all, we're not new. People who are of the LGBTI community, people who have different sexual preferences, and people who express gender in all kinds of ways, we're not new. We're not traditional. We've been here a long time. Members of our community have been in the region, across the region, from our ancestors. And so this idea that we're foreign, or that we're not new, or that we're against some morals, I think is just untrue. And of course, yes, there are traditional conservative views about, you know, that being heterosexual is the norm, or the only way to be, or expressing gender as solidly masculine or feminine that must match with the idea of being a man or a woman. Those things change and shift over time, and they are rooted in cultural norms. They're also rooted in religion. And so we also have to remember that we are, yes, while we may be a minority in terms of numbers, we're not from here. We are here.
Katie.
And we've been here a long time.
Katie.
And I would like to add that, you know, if you enter any crowded room in Trinidad and Tobago, you're going to find people from all sorts of religious and moral persuasions. So to assume that one perspective has to take primacy and dictate the lives of many, many people is just unrealistic, and it's a bit unfair. Everyone should be free to live their life in a very healthy way, and that is what we want.
Okay.
Yeah, sexual and gender diversity are not new. And those of us in the community, we believe and we have different faiths. And, you know, this is not, we're not outside of those. We all have our different spiritual beliefs. We come from different class, race, ethnic backgrounds. We come from different places. And we have different political beliefs too, but we certainly don't want to be discriminated against. And we have rights.
Okay. All right, so we're going to come back to you in a moment, but as I indicated, we've been joined by two other persons in the studio, Zico Cozier, who is a content creator and a blogger. Welcome to the program, Zico.
Thanks for having me.
I knew you when a little boy with your father walking around. You've become a big man now, right?
Thanks, guys.
And we have Ronel White, who is from the Silver Lining Foundation. Tell me something about the foundation.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. So the Silver Lining Foundation, it is a youth-led, youth-based organization that really seeks to address bullying in schools, gender-based bullying, as well as LGBTI bullying. It was founded when a young boy, George Kasanjian, actually killed himself and committed suicide because of bullying at school because of his perceived sexual orientation. And our executive director, Mr. Jeremy Edwards, decided to form a foundation where people would be more aware and conscious of the ills and negative effects psychologically that persons of the LGBTI community have to contend with when, you know, entering spaces, education spaces such as school and so on. And from there, a lot of initiatives and projects and so on, you know, took place to really address these concerns. And what we noticed and realized is that people oftentimes think that bullying on any basis, oh, it's a rite of passage, it's a Trini thing, we all went through that, look, we turn out good, it'll make you stronger and whatnot, without acknowledging the mental health issues that really do come out from bullying.
Okay, and so we're going to come back to you in a moment, but let me go to Zico for an initial statement. I want to come back to you, Ronel, in a moment as to whether there is much of that happening in the school system at a very young age.
We have a report with evidence.
Great. So, Zico, tell me something about your particular situation as an individual, meaning that do you go through what has been talked about, discrimination, stigma, and all of these matters associated with a lifestyle which might be considered different from other people?
Well, there definitely is a lot of discrimination that you would have had to face growing up as an LGBTQ person in Trinidad and Tobago. And I think that a very important word that she would have used just now would be perceived sexuality. Because I can speak as someone who would have attended Fatima College. There was nobody who I knew of in Fatima College who was openly affiliated with the LGBTQI community. However, there were many people who were bullied because of their perceived sexual identity or expression. So
in those situations, even going back to my time as a schoolboy, and that was yesterday, it was a CC, you don't play this game, you don't play that game, you don't get dirty, etc., etc. But I must say in that time, I don't know, I can't remember if it went into lifestyle issues, it was just that you were a little soft boy and 2-3 little tap will fix you up and so on.
Pretty much.
Clearly, it's more than that.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, so I think a lot of people try to make arguments based on the morality. But if you look at how people choose to, I guess, direct their vitriol, they don't even have to know who you may be sleeping with. It's based off of, I guess, a discrimination because someone is different or does not conform to what is expected of, I guess, someone belonging to their gender. Because a common thing that we speak about is that a lot of heterosexual men have a much more negative reaction towards gay men than they would towards lesbians, especially if a lesbian might be a lipstick lesbian, which is something
what
that...
A lipstick lesbian?
I guess a lesbian who looks... who's very feminine and who may present a certain idealized fantasy to, I guess, a straight man who may have, you know, I guess, grown up watching certain types of visuals presented to them, I guess, for the male gaze.
Yeah. Let's go back to Dr. Nixon on the line because she just has a few minutes left with us. So, Dr. Nixon, if you were approaching the politicians and the political parties, what would be listed on your agenda for politicians to take note of so that if and when they get into office, these are matters that they can prosecute on behalf of the different groups?
I would remind them that the Equal Opportunity Commission currently cannot take any cases of discrimination if one has been discriminated against on the basis of being LGBTI.
Why is that so, Dr. Nixon?
Because the Equal Opportunity Act currently explicitly excludes sexual orientation. It says that sex does not include sexual orientation.
So there is
so this
a need.
Means that,
sorry, go ahead. Sorry. You go ahead.
No, so this means that if I have been discriminated against on the basis of my sexual orientation or even gender identity, whether it's seeking employment or at the workplace, or if I've gone into a store and attempted to purchase something and they have discriminated against me or said you can get out because you're gay, or have experienced some kind of being kicked out of an apartment from a rental place, I have no way of going to the Equal Opportunity Commission and saying that this has happened to me and I'm trying to seek redress.
Let me ask you,
that this should be on the politician's agenda.
Right.
that the Equal Opportunity Act needs to be amended.
Right. Has this
with
been,
a number of things.
Has this point been raised previously with both major parties, the government of the day and the opposition of the day?
Yes, absolutely.
And what have been the reactions?
Well, we haven't got much response. We certainly did approach politicians during the last election season with an agenda and saying that these are the things that would help people who are in the community, as well as a number of other things related to health and access to health, were the things that we identified as major concerns within the community.
And they have not been acted upon.
Well, the Equal Opportunity Commission has supported the campaign to amend the EOA. They have their own list of amendments that includes adding sexual orientation, as well as health conditions, as well as age, and a number of other things.
Mm-hmm.
So we're supporting that work, and we've worked closely with them, and we've worked across the LGBTI organizations in Trinidad and Tobago, as well as other human rights organizations.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've been building a champion for the adultery campaign, and we will be sharing more of that information in the coming months as we are in election season.
Yeah. Is there going to be... are you going to take out your own campaign, as it were, form your own platform in the season to articulate your needs to the politicians in the same way as that they are articulating what they think are some of the issues that should be brought to them as political aspirants, as it were?
Yes, the coalition of LGBTI organizations in Trinidad and Tobago that includes Silver Lining Foundation, CAISO, I Am One, WaMantra, Women's Caucus, and Trans Coalition, and Friends for Life, we've all working to put together a policy agenda, and that's actually going to be really supported through some research that we just did called Life Stories, where we collected firsthand through interviews with working class LGBTI folks living in Trinidad and Tobago.
Let me ask you if you think that people from the various communities are sufficiently confident to come forward and articulate their needs in the same way that business groups, trade unions, etc. have been articulating their needs to the political parties over the years.
No, I don't think that's easy at all. I think it's difficult, and that's why the LGBTI organizations are working in our different communities in the areas that we focus on to make sure that those needs are heard. And we work to create safe spaces, or at least safer spaces. But it's very difficult. And that's one of our challenges.
Okay. Am I correct in saying somebody must have told me that you are from the Bahamas? Is that so?
I am originally from the Bahamas, yeah.
Have you heard anything about your relatives and so on?
Well, thank you for asking. I appreciate that. Yes, my loved ones are safe, but it's a very, very difficult, very challenging right now.
Okay, which island are they on?
I have family on Grand Bahama, and they went through it, and their house is pretty much flooded completely. So I'm still waiting to hear from them about what they need, but there's no communication right now. I know that they're alive and safe.
Right. I heard your Prime Minister this morning urging Trinidadians and Tobagonians to reach out to fellow CARICOM Bahamians in the position. Is there going to be some kind of organization here that somebody like yourself may want to develop?
Yes, go ahead. Yes, we are. Right now I am organizing with the human rights groups that I work with in the Bahamas, as well as here at UWE, at the Institute for Gender and Development Studies, and the Coalition Against Domestic Violence. We are calling for relief donations, and we're going to send supplies this weekend using Caribbean Airlines. So there'll be more information launched today.
Okay. Dr. Nixon, thank you very much for talking with us on Power 102, and I'm sure that we're going to be talking to you as your campaign develops over the period of time.
Great. Thank you so much.
Take care. And we're going to come back. We have an additional person here. We're expecting more people, and we're talking about groups and individuals who have statements to make to politicians in the election campaign that is coming up. Stay with us. So Aisha, we are fully modern and technologically savvy.
Technologically savvy.
I can't pretend that I know all those things, but the important thing is to get the messages across, and we're going to talk about it. Okay, so we are talking in this segment of the program with representatives of different groups who feel that they are discriminated against, they are stigmatized in the society, and they want to make those concerns known to politicians who are campaigning to get their votes. Of course, in the United States of America and different countries throughout Europe, many of these groups form formidable voting sections of the population, and they cannot be ignored. And the groups and the representatives of the groups in Trinidad and Tobago are saying similarly they have to be considered. Well, since the last time, we've been joined by another panelist, Brandy Rodriguez, who represents the Trinidad and Tobago Transgender Coalition. Welcome to the program, Brandy.
Hi, good day.
Right. Perhaps we need to clear up in the minds of so give us an appreciation of that.
Okay. Being transgender is really assigned to what is in the mind and how you feel, and not really the sex you were assigned to at birth, because there are trans male and trans female. You could either be. I know there are different terms, transvestites and transsexuals, but this clarification for being transgender is the transitioning to the sex, I know, not the one that you were assigned to at birth. But it actually feels in with what is in your heart and what is in your mind, and what the body is telling the mind, this is how I should feel and this is how I want to feel.
So do people transition to one particular gender group and remain there, or are they fluid back and forth?
No. Actually, from my experience, knowing being transgender for the last 20 years and working in the environment, medically transitioning persons is not something that you could just, you know, switch on and switch off. Transgender, actually, if you're medically transitioning, there's no way that you could go back, you know, because persons are doing transitioning their bodies.
Mm-hmm.
So going back is not, that's not
okay.
Going to be happening.
So you transition to a position.
You transition to a position where,
and you remain,
but actually it stays there. But the transvestites, that's what we known as the drag queens. So those are the persons who are just the illusion, female illusion or male illusion. Those are transvestites. So those are totally different. So today they wear women clothes and tomorrow they wear men clothes. That's totally different.
So they are fluid in terms of what they perceive themselves to be.
Yeah.
Okay. Important to get those things out of the way. I don't know if you were listening to the program before, but the different groups of different individuals are talking about the ways in which they are discriminated against.
Mm-hmm.
How is it for transgender persons?
There's a lot of stigma and discrimination, and it starts with the family. It starts internally in the LGBTI community. It starts, you know, in the workplace. It starts, you know, in the schools, in the homes. So these are some of the things that the stigma and discrimination is there, because being gay is one, but being trans, you know, is even another. So I think the stigma and discrimination is a lot more, and the support is not there once you're being trans.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So let me hear some other people you were saying.
Yeah.
I think I was saying your name wrongly, because
Renel.
I have, it's Ronel.
Renel.
Yes. With an E.
Renel.
Okay, Renel. Yes.
Yeah. Also, mm-hmm. Earlier I mentioned bullying in schools, and it is a form of discrimination, and you showed some concern about that. So the Silver Lining decided to do an actual survey in schools. Now, a couple of years ago, Minister Garcia said that, hey, there's no bullying in schools, that's not happening all year.
That does not exist. People are
people, it's an American.
Yeah, that's an American thing. And we are trying to, you know, import American terminology by citing bullying and so on in schools. So the Silver Lining Foundation said, hey, you know what? You want some evidence? We're going to go out there in schools and actually conduct a survey to try to get some information about it, because we know that it does happen. So in 2016, they conducted a baseline survey to assess the prevalence of gender-based violence, mm-hmm. because LGBTI discrimination does fall under gender-based violence. Mm-hmm. Yeah? So I think we need to understand that, and the community listening and politicians need to understand that very clearly, that LGBTI bullying discrimination is a form of gender-based violence.
Mm-hmm.
As Zico mentioned before, reiterating my point, that a lot of students are bullied based on their perceived sexual orientation. This goes directly back into how we discriminate based on gender identity, and that is really hinged around ideas of homophobia and masculinity, and Angelique actually alluded to that earlier. So we need to understand the sociocultural climate that we live in the Caribbean. The Caribbean is very homophobic, right? There mightn't be as much physical violence that persons would like to say, hey, well, you know what? There's so much killings and so on, like in other parts of the country. But the culture and the fact that we use religion as a moral standard and base to really say, hey, you know what? You're going against God and religion, and the Bible doesn't say. So I read an article earlier by Akilah Holder, and I have no shame, and I am unapologetic, right, in bringing up her name, where she criticized and ridiculed the Presbyterian Church, who is trying to be so much more progressive in terms of understanding the continuum of sexuality, right? And she was like, no, God says so, the Bible says this, and the Presbyterian Church is wrong, right, and out of line, okay. And they cannot be called a church for doing that.
One day we're going to invite the pastors to have that kind of discussion. But Zico, let me ask you, there is stigma and discrimination, perhaps on an individual basis. Mm-hmm. I don't like the way you have positioned yourself. I don't like why, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And that is like that. But at an official level, you go into a government office to get a passport and you have to fill out what form and so on. Is there any discrimination against you as that official? And I make a distinction between the individual, because I feel a certain way, the other person feels another way, tomorrow I might feel differently. So that moves up and down the place. But we are talking about official reaction to people who belong to one group or the other of the groups that we are talking about.
Definitely. There are different settings where people are more likely to experience discrimination, and also with regards to trans rights, how well someone is able to pass. That means if you are transitioning from male to female or from female to male, right? The ability to pass means that you present as the sex that you have transitioned to, but not everybody has the same access to resources to be able to achieve that level of medical transition.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are a trans, identify as trans, and you are not a passing trans person, you are definitely going to experience negative reactions in these official spaces.
Yes, I think the stigma and discrimination would be a lot more if persons who have medically transitioned and a person that has just been, you know, who identified to just be a transgender person, it's going to be a lot more. But I think it also has a lot to do with your economic background and where you come from and all privileges.
Yes.
It has a lot to do with
privilege
that also.
So if you are socially and economically at the top of the ladder,
people
may tend to accept you for who you are.
Exactly.
It's more likely.
Because, you know, your circle, who you are and who you are, and it's not where you came from, but
because,
it's who you are.
Because when people determine who are we going to discriminate against, it's a subconscious decision that's being made in a split second. They're not analyzing you closely behind a government counter to decide, am I going to discriminate against this person? No. In a split second, that decision is made, right? So they don't know who you're sleeping with. They don't know where you're living.
Mm-hmm.
What they do know is what you present to them.
Mm-hmm.
So it has nothing to do with who you're sleeping with. It has to do in that very moment with what you visually are displaying, presenting.
If you conform or not.
If you conform or not. So if you are a gay man, perhaps you have light skin, maybe you belong, might be perceived as belonging to a certain class, you will be more likely to, and also too, if you're more masculine as a gay man. So a more masculine gay man is not going to have to deal with these types of things on a day-to-day basis. So they might tell you, yeah, I live my life just fine.
If I can interject, I understand that people will fear what they don't understand.
What they don't understand.
So the reaction of persons in society, in my humble opinion, may be based out of ignorance in some, to some extent, and of course of fear because they don't understand.
Yeah.
But when it comes down to policy, according to the laws of our land, it is still illegal to perform certain types of acts that may be in tandem with the lifestyle what we're talking about. What is it that activists are trying to get our government to understand so we can then transition from a state of ignorance as a society? Because as it stands, people are going to say, well, it's illegal.
The Buggery Law was repealed. The next step, which is what you want to find out about,
thank you.
I believe that his previous guest spoke about it in great detail, is that there is the what the name of the act and the inclusion that prevents people from being discriminated. Equal Opportunity Act.
Great.
Right? So the LGBTQI community is asking for and has been asking for is that the same way that you cannot be discriminated against based on ethnicity in the workplace, in terms of seeking housing and whatnot, you can't be discriminated against based on who you are. Every creed and race find an equal place in the national anthem. That sentence is the basis for the Equal Opportunity Act. But the Equal Opportunity Act does not include that level of protection for people of the LGBTQI community. So if you are fired or discriminated against based on your job, you cannot, there's no redress for you.
I know Katie, you wanted to say something, yes?
And in addition to those sort of policy actions, we are also trying to partner with different institutions to provide support for the LGBT appreciate the teachers to give them sensitivity training. So we are engaging in public education as well, because as you said, there are lots of
political parties reached out to the organizations wanting to be a part of what is happening. Do you care to talk about it?
Well, have you all any?
No, we have had no contact.
We haven't, but I could say that the COP did include it to some extent in their last manifesto, but it was not implemented and there was not follow through like what we expected.
Okay.
Because, I mean, you could have all the talks and all the printouts and all the press releases online on Facebook, but to actually stand up on a platform and address the nation and make it part of your policies agenda, to actually have inclusion on the basis of different sexual orientation and whatnot, we are really calling to see this political will.
We're going to ask everybody in a moment to set an agenda for the political parties. What they're going to do? How are they going to say yay or nay to some of these matters? But my friend Rudolph, I know him as Rudy, but he says he's Rudolph. So, Manamji, welcome to the program. He is the chairman of Pride Trinidad and Tobago. And I don't know if you were listening to the discussion, but we were. I'm trying to get at official stigma and discrimination against people from the various groups as distinct from, I not like to you and saying I don't like how you're looking or some kind of thing like that. Is that rare for people who belong to the groups?
Good afternoon, Tony. Thank you for having me, and good afternoon to your listeners and Aisha.
How are you?
And my colleague here on the panel. Stigma and discrimination against the LGBTQI community is real. It is not something that is easy to articulate or to differentiate, because it is complicated by other issues such as classism, ethnic division, socioeconomic background, etc. However, since Pride TT was formed 2 years ago, we have been able to engage an even larger audience across the country, and we have been getting reports and actual evidence that people have been thrown out of their homes. They have been overpassed for promotions. Even at the school level, there are times when they want to participate in a certain activity, but they are not allowed. So these things are happening, and that's real discrimination. And then, of course, you have more passive acts of discrimination where people may not directly engage you or act in a manner to exclude you, but they will not encourage you either. They will simply go to someone else for assistance in the workplace, etc. So these things are real, and some of us feel it at different points in different ways because of insulation that we may have or privilege that some of us may have, but it is real.
Let me ask you something, Rudy, and everybody else. I remember seeing you on the last Pride Parade, and you were out in the open and you were articulating, you were identifying and so on. Has there been any greater discrimination against you at all kinds of levels since then?
Personally, no, because I do come from one of those privileged classes where people recognize me, whether it is in the business arena, because of the other relationships they have with me. So they have moved past, for the most part, my sexuality. However, in being more involved in the community, I have seen where others have suffered trauma because they don't have those protections. So I would not be able to speak personally for the discrimination experiences of others. But that is not to say, for example, my brothers, sisters, and non-binary folk from the trans community, I have seen firsthand where they are still beaten up within inches of their life. The reason we chose Mandela Park last year and this year was because Sasha Fierce was murdered there.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you don't have to go much further than that. As well as when we met with the Commissioner of Police, he himself acknowledged the need for a gender-based violence unit, which we're all going to be working with him on, because the data is there to show that discrimination moves past just verbal into actual physical assault. So I don't personally receive any extended attacks or violence, but others do.
How difficult was it for any one of you to accept my invitation to come before a national radio microphone and articulate your position and how you would like political parties to react to you? I see Zico is shaking his head. Zico.
Well, for the past 2 years, there's been a lot of developments with regards to the LGBTQI community sort of stepping out of the shadows and stepping into the light. And it all started around the movement to have the Buggery Law repealed. And one of the first major gatherings took place in front of Parliament, right? So I remember when that protest was being planned, there was a lot of debate and discussion among my friends. Wait, is this something that we should go to? Because to us, we had never actually gathered in that light before. So there were some of us who were, I guess, more confident, who the immediate reaction was, yeah, I have to be there. But for me personally, I can say I actually was not sure. I actually was not sure if people were going to show up, if it was my responsibility to show up, if I might end up being photographed and end up on the front page of the Express the next day, would I then get people harassing me in my inbox on Facebook? Mm-hmm. I had all of these thoughts. And in the end, I sort of took comfort in the numbers of my friends. Many of my friends expressed interest, and we decided, okay, we're going to go together. We showed up. It was fine. And from there, I also decided to start documenting these experiences. So I've always been that person who tries to film and do live streaming as a content creator. So I walk around, I talk to people, I get them to share their stories. And with each time that I've done that, I've felt more comfortable, I've felt more empowered. So there's a lot of importance to being able to step out there in your truth. And I never really had that sense of security in myself until I was able to, I guess, do that.
I'm going to come to KD in a moment, mm-hmm. but I asked that question, KD and everybody else, that if you will you have the kind of confidence required to go to a political party, to go to the prime minister, to go to the leader of the opposition and say, we as a community are demanding, just like the business community does, just like the trade unions do, etc., certain rights, certain legal protections for the future. Do you have the confidence that you will do that?
Well, for me personally, I came here out of necessity because my other members were unwilling to attend. And coming from someone who is not from a position of privilege, I'm constantly aware of, you know, you hear talk, for instance, when I go for job interviews sometimes someone will come and tell me after, no, well, you didn't get chosen because of your views or whatever. So I am aware that there's a great risk. But at this point, it's sort of like you can't stay hidden anymore. There has to be a critical point. Because people think we aren't here and that we don't exist and that there aren't enough of us for people to care. But in fact, we are everywhere. And I feel, you know, of course, we're going to still need spokespeople because some people are not in positions to speak for themselves. And I think that's what we'll be working with, spokespeople and, of course, community dialogue that we will then present our ideas to politicians and different platforms.
Dandy.
Well, basically, I'm really here on, not for Brandy, but for the Trinidad and Tobago Transgender Coalition, and I would really like to share that the dynamics of the gender diversity training that is really needed in the healthcare system, and, you know, in the police and the education system. I think there's a lot to, you know, to talk about, and we could share a lot in terms of training, because the board is actually, my board is, you know, is really, is 100% trans persons. Our advisors are, you know, differently, but, you know, the board actually is made up with years of experience in being transitioned, medically transitioning, and also persons who are of trans experience. So I think what we would like to share would be, you know, my implementation would be for the coalition to start gender diversity training for, you know, to these individuals, politicians, and the different sectors.
Yeah. Because you mentioned the police, you know, key men groups, the police and the army and tough fellas and so on. Are they? How have they responded? Are they likely to respond favorably?
Well, as I say, being attached to Pride TT last year and this year, and being on the forefront of Pride in 2019, I think really bring a difference in terms of trans persons being out there. Now, you have to be visible so that they would know that there's a community like this. Visibility is what's going to bring about the change, because it's easy for the government to say, well, we don't have any trans people in this country, because they don't see trans people. They see MSM, they will see lesbians, but they don't see trans people, so they, you know, they wouldn't have that kind of discussion. So with being attached to Pride in the last 2 years, I think has generated a lot more concerns with individuals, with government, with other NGOs, the private sector, the public sector, in terms of asking now. So my being in Pride has given a lot. It has given a lot more than just Brandy, but the Trinidad and Tobago Transgender Coalition.
I know Renelle was, one second, we're going to go to some statements we have online in a moment, but just let me allow Renelle to say, sure. Renelle White to say her piece with regard to bullying.
I really want to hear some comments and questions from.
Yeah, sure, you're going to hear them in a moment.
So I'll be quick. But you asked the question, were we afraid or not confident to actually be here to speak publicly and address the nation? For me personally, like Rudy said, I believe that I do have some sort of privilege being an ally to the LGBTI community as well, where I don't have to face that discrimination because of my sexual orientation, even though I do stand in solidarity as a human rights activist.
Do you get stigmatized and attached to
I do, and it really does not bother me at all, because my agenda is the human rights agenda, right? And I believe that being a feminist, because I am an unapologetic feminist, and that is where my whole work with the LGBTI community and standing up for their rights and so on came from, because I understand as a woman the sort of climate that we live in, and I understand how it feels to be discriminated against, just being a girl, just being born a girl, still from the little things to the bigger things, inequalities and inequities and so on. So for me, and for my organization, the Silver Lining Foundation, I think that they are quite confident in standing up to politicians, and I know that our director, Mr. Jeremy Edwards, will be very much, you know, just very much strong and in the forefront when it comes to things like this. He's also a member of the COP, working on the youth okay. Congress as well.
All right, so let's go to our Facebook page.
Our message board. Persons are asking, firstly, to slowly identify what the letters stand for, because you're saying it but pretty fast, okay. So people don't understand. So we'll start there.
A quick
L is lesbian.
Yeah, you want to go the whole gamut, right?
Yeah, L lesbian, G gay, B bisexual, LGBT, transgender or transsexual, I.
Intersex.
Then there's also Q that we have added for queer, which really is like a synopsis or summarizes all different or alternative sexualities or different gender performances and gender expressions, just, you know, being queer. Okay. Some persons even add A for asexual.
Yes. And aromantic.
So, it really just is an acronym to symbolize and embody that sexuality exists and gender identity and expression exists on a continuum. And we need to understand that as human beings that it isn't black and white or polar opposite.
Sure, we're also being asked to have any of the organizations approach political parties, not necessarily waiting on parties to approach them. So have you made contact with any political
parties? Rudy is going to respond to that.
So for those who may have a Trinidadian memory, I actually also used to be...
Trinidadian?
I think nine names?
No, it's like three, right? I also used to be an executive member of the Congress of the People in a former incarnation. And I'm saying that to give the context that I didn't only approach, I got involved in politics. And there are many members of the LGBTQI community who are involved in politics and advocacy work. And yes, Pride TT as an organization is a more political minded organization than, let's say, another NGO which is more social work based. So I can speak from that point of view that going into the election cycle, when we had our stakeholders meeting, and Brandy, you weren't there, but I think Ronell, you would hear me out on this, I did say at that meeting that this year is a political year for Pride. And at the very first Pride event, I made it known that the pink dollar, which is the spending and economic capacity of the LGBTQI community, that data will be brought to bear on the government. Because from an economic point of view, we contribute a lot to national development like any other citizen, whether it's through taxes or our employment, our works and ways, etc. But are we treated as equal and equitable citizens? And I think the case is being made out that many of us aren't. So we will, yes, we are going to approach the political parties, but it has to be from a community-based dynamic. In other words, the five of us around this table can't go to the parties and say, well, this is what we want. We have to engage our community.
Five votes here.
No, he's excellent. I mean, politicians respect numbers.
Five or four votes one way or the other.
They saw close to 700 people a few weeks ago on Tragley Road.
And of course, being asked, what are the policies that Ms. Brandy is talking about in respect to health? What is different from regular healthcare citizens?
Mm-hmm. Well, firstly, I would have to say that the health entity needs a lot of reform, because as a trans person, medically transitioning, who have not completed my transition, I would say something goes, you know, you go into emergency accident and it goes through emergency. Because of your genitals, we'll have to put you in a male ward. That's what they're actually saying to me right now. Because I know in my last, why I asked for this is because of my last engagement with the Ministry of Health. One of my, you know, colleagues was really ill, and because they won't completely medically transition, they said that, you know, this person has to be in a male ward. And, you know, I think that after dealing with that, I understood clearly there's a lot of reform, there's a lot of gender diversity training that needs to be done, because they have to understand, or we have to make them understand what the community is looking for, and what we are about, and who we are.
Yeah.
And not because of my genitals I'm male, and or because I you know, I'm you're seeing breasts that I'm female, you know, because the male, the trans male, you know, is totally, they're at risk more too. So I think, honestly, these are the conversations that we want to have with the health system, and try to see if we could get some kind of reform where that is concerned.
Brandy, as a matter of information and education to our listeners, I think you've touched on a couple of things that are interesting in terms of the information that people should have. So you're talking about mental transition from one gender to the other gender, but physical transition has not happened, or does not happen immediately.
Over a period of time. You have to access that mental treatment first. You have to visit your doctors and all of that. So they have to make sure that this person really wants, you know, wants to transition, and you have to get that documentation first before you could start medical transition.
Because there is no turning back.
There will be no turning back.
Yeah, you have more questions.
Yes, we do
more
have
responses.
More questions. All right. So someone is asking, in the case of, let's just use the health care that Ms. Brandy is talking about, when you check into a health facility, is it normal procedure to be checked by any particular type of doctor, or does a regular doctor help?
Just regular doctors. All the information is needed. Gender should not be an issue. Your gender mark that is on your national ID, actually, that is the contention. Once they see male, male is male, female is female. That gender mark that is there. For medically transitioning persons, the laws is not in place to change that gender mark also. So even though you traveling, your passport and national IDs would still be male, because that's the gender mark that you won't be able to change.
Let me ask all of you, from your articulation, you are sophisticated, understanding, clear thought persons, and so on. But like in any group of people, there are people who cannot explain it and articulate it, like Rudy and Brandy and all of you here. What happens to, it just struck me, is that somebody who is not so articulate, not so understanding of, and that is not peculiar to LGBT people, that is common amongst any group of people. I mean, they must be under even more pressure, because they can't understand these things in the way that you do.
So that is one of the things that Queer Corner actually does. We try to provide opportunities to educate members of the LGBT community of issues that are affecting us, but also arguments that we can use when we are faced with people who want us to justify our existence, basically.
Mm-hmm. How do you fund yourself as groups? Struck me. I mean, you must need resources. You're talking about information. You're talking about developing all kinds of programs and so on. How do you fund yourself?
Well, luckily, we have foreign missions here in Trinidad and Tobago, and it is a pro and a con, because we get so much support from foreign missions as opposed to our own local government. The British High Commission, the Canadian Embassy, U.S. Embassy, they often give grants, because they are committed to creating a space in Trinidad and Tobago where, like I mentioned before, human rights is really part of the day and part of the agenda. So we at Silver Lining Foundation, we get a lot of funding and grants to go out there and do projects such as the teacher training project. We also have a Stronger Families project going on as well, where we try to address issues that people face within their families, because there is bullying within families, and it starts from the home as well. So we get that type of funding. Just last Saturday, we had our own annual fundraiser, which is a karaoke that we have. So it's all fun and great, but we also use the earnings and the funds that we gathered to keep on pushing our agenda, which really is to create an awareness and change the social and cultural climate of Trinidad and Tobago, where persons will not be afraid to go to school, where persons will not feel depressed and anxious and suffer from mental all we're really asking for, a space in our nation where persons of different backgrounds and identities, the LGBTI community, where they can really feel as if they are full human beings and be treated as such.
I see. Zico wants to say something. No? All right, let's go to the board then.
Yeah, definitely. We're also being asked, how would you feel about persons currently in the UK engaging in birth certificates that do not have or assign gender? How would you think about that policy happening?
I'm totally fine with that. That is the optimal option.
Tell me about that.
Okay, for one thing, when you're looking at birth certificates, right, what is the function of the gender marker on the birth certificate? What is it meant to do? If it's an issue of healthcare, then I am sure the person themselves is fully capable of expressing to their medical provider that they're of a certain, their genitalia, what their genitalia is or whatever, what their needs are, what their health needs are, right? In terms of bathroom.
But if you go to an immigration post and there is no gender assigned to either of your pieces of identification, to come into a country, to leave a country, how does an immigration officer square the one thing against the other?
Well, interestingly,
it's being done already in Canada, in the UK, and in certain states in the US. It's already being done, where you have gender X passport, gender X birth certificate, gender X national identification. Because it really, I mean, even if you're going to talk about demographics, right, the issues that trans women are women, so they're going to be aligned to issues that women also face, right? The issues that trans men face, trans men are men, they're going to be aligned to some of the issues that men face.
I just wanted to say that I travel a lot, and what struck me about this whole discussion was that they match a photograph to a name and your biometrics in some countries, which they have, and even our country doesn't have our own biometrics. But it really is not a matter, they don't look to see if you're male or female. If the photograph and the name is what they're seeing in front of them, and you can sign that signature in whatever identification, that's what, when I go to the bank, for example, they pay more attention to my signature than if my hair is longer and I shave today. So I want us to put these things in perspective. I mean, it might sound a little facetious, but gender really doesn't have much to do with identity. Identity dynamics, and I don't use this word lightly, but the developed world, they have moved past these issues. So why are we in the Caribbean? I just came back from Bermuda Pride. It's the first time they had Pride, and they are still a colony of Britain, for example. And they are still struggling with issues that the colonial masters left with us, that we hold on to and hug up when the night comes. And yet the British people have moved on and they have apologized to the world for these issues. Yeah. And I just want to add quickly that the LGBTQI community can also fund itself when mobilized properly, because Pride is 100% funded by our allies and our community members.
Anybody has... I know it has to be an approximate number of people belonging to the various groups, a total. 10,000, 200,000, what's the figure?
There's global estimates where it's estimated that as much as 10% of the population in every country would belong to the LGBTQI community. Obviously, the more developed a country is, the more likely that the number that identifies as such will be closer to 10%.
Yeah.
The more conservative or less developed a country is, the number comes down to 1%.
Yeah, but Rudy, Rudy was saying a moment ago that it depends on your social and economic status, but also the reverse of that, Rudy, there may be people, and I'm only suggesting because I don't know for a fact, that there may be people.
I came back from Bermuda, they've had marriage equality for over 20 years. Their currency exchange is one Bermudan dollar to one US dollar. Their country is very well developed, so 20 years of gay marriage has not destroyed their family network and their country. So just look, let's put things in real perspective.
Yeah. Okay, so we're going to go to the telephone lines.
The lines are already busy.
Wow.
So for those wanting to get into the program, you can call 222-8255. 612-8255. Let's see who's there. The
line's
open.
Good afternoon to you, caller. Hello.
Professor Aishan and your guest. I have no problem with the individuals because I came after them. I have no problem. But the thing that bothered me with them is the constant asking about rights and rights and rights. The last time I checked, nobody, you're breathing air just like me. You're getting salary from whatever job you're doing. I mean, the only discrimination comes up because of the mere fact that in the book, the good book, we all know it's wrong. So, I'm like I say, I have no problem with y'all, but I keep asking myself, why is y'all always talking about rights and rights? You'll have all the rights just as me. You'll have all the rights just as me, but you're
all right, thank you, Paul.
No. Let's take a couple more calls before
and we want to ask persons to be respectful, yes, when you're calling. Let's go. Hi, you're live.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead, caller.
Yes, well, first of all, let me start by saying that I was very anti-gay, but then I realized I had cousins who were gay. And I started to study them for a while, and I realized something. Why, if they could answer this, why does one always have to assume a masculine role and the other a feminine role? If it was something totally natural.
Another caller on the line?
Yes.
We take three and then we go.
Okay, sure. Hi, caller, you're live, not there. Hi, caller, you're live.
Hello.
Yes, caller, go ahead.
Oh, hi, good evening. Good program. Now, I understand in any progressive society, sexual orientation and inclusion is a must. Let me tell you my personal pet peeve. It seems as if when you're heterosexual, that you are abnormal, and there's a very high intolerance once you decide that you want to be a heterosexual. And that is the only problem I have, because if it is that you talking about inclusion, and why me, who not interested in being like that, and I respect you as whatever, I don't call you abnormal, but it seems, if anybody have ever encountered people who are in that community, they snub at you, they talk down at you, if you don't express the same view, they treat you as if you the abnormal person, and you want inclusion, but you're treating people like abnormal. And that's a fact.
All right, so thank you, caller. Blessings.
We're going to get some responses to one person for one question. The first question is, why rights? I mean, according to the caller, the Bible say that you fellas are not right and so on and so on. So why are you screaming for rights so much?
Okay.
JD is going to respond to that.
First of all, our constitution is not based on the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So we cannot be saying that the Bible is the justification for denying people rights. Everybody is born human with several inviolable human rights, right?
Mm-hmm.
And all we are trying to do is ensure that in Trinidad and Tobago our laws align with international human rights law.
Zico, I saw you getting all excited regarding the question about reverse discrimination. I think that is what the caller was saying, that you all are intolerant.
Okay.
Of quote-unquote straight people.
I think a lot of the callers were somewhat on the same wavelength. Now, I would want to start off by applauding the fact that the callers were mostly respectful, and that 10 years ago we probably would not have even gotten that level of support that we did hear from the callers.
Yeah,
and
we,
I do
we might have been outside of the door, we
yeah,
can
yeah.
see you all. And we might get burned in the
right. So before I dissect their actual statements, I really do want to say that it was heartwarming that you could hear that they were really trying to be respectful and trying to understand and looking for experiences that they've had in their own lives where they've had to connect with people belonging to the community, whether it be through playing mass or through their cousins. So I want to applaud that first and foremost, right? Reverse discrimination. Rudy mentioned that Pride City, the Pride March, and all other activities that take place in the month of Pride are funded 100% by us,
and
our
allies.
Community,
and allies.
And allies, right? Now, when events of national importance or events that are significant to specific communities take place in this country, checks are written, right?
But I don't think you're answering the caller's question.
No, I'm
the caller's question, we don't have a lot of time.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll get to that.
The question is, that according to the caller, he feels that people from the various communities talk down to quote-unquote straight people, discriminating against them.
I have never encountered a situation. I've literally never encountered a situation where a straight person has been made to feel unwelcome because they're were straight. It's a very hard thing to understand. I think what they're trying to get at actually is that sometimes when you express views such as the ones that they expressed just now, I personally chose to see the positive in what they were saying. But if they expressed those same comments in a room full of LGBTQ people, the reaction would be a bit of outrage.
Yeah. Renee,
and
you wanted to say
that,
something.
I think
let's move along quickly.
Yes, I mean, as a non-LGBTI person, I feel most comfortable in LGBTI spaces. All my friends are part of the LGBTI community because they really...
But they accept you, according
to
the caller. The caller would say is that they accept you because you're not the norm, because there are people outside there who are straight, who
like
feel
myself.
What
I could say is that it does vary from person's experiences. Don't get me wrong. Human beings could just be bad human beings. It doesn't have anything to do with sexual orientation. Not because a gay man, let's say, is mean to you means he's mean because he's gay.
Yeah.
We need to understand that.
All
we
right.
have to
let's,
break
let's go to the telephone
right?
line again. Good afternoon to you, caller.
Good afternoon.
Hello, good afternoon.
Yes, go ahead, please.
A very interesting conversation. I would like to make three quick points. One, the individuals who are now of that community, if their parents were of a similar nature, they would have not become existent. Because male-male and female-female cannot reproduce. So it tells that if their parents were like them, they would have been non-existent.
So what's your
question?
Point two. The thing about it is, male and male, female and female, are a means of self-destruction. Because according to our existence today, we need male and female in whatever community, whether it's the animals, plants, and us as humans.
Your third point? What's your third point?
Female, in order for there to be reproduction.
Alright, so what's your third point?
What I'm saying is this. That lifestyle may eventually lead, if it is widespread, to the self-destruction of our existence as we know it today. Thank you.
Thank you.
So can
we have another call? That's a statement of his opinion, and I don't think we need to respond to that. We have another call on the line with a question. Good afternoon to you, caller.
Yes, hello.
Seem to have lost you.
No. Yes.
Can you speak up? We're hardly hearing you.
Yes, I'm here. You hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Yeah. Okay. We have two issues with this. Right? Why it is that members of this community always see people who have a problem with it as being intolerant? The same way that you want me to accept your lifestyle, you should be able to accept that I am saying that it is wrong. Right? Because that's my view. You have to accept my view, but also accept that I disagree with you. And secondly, why it is if you are disregarding the natural way of procreating, why would you want to adopt children?
Let me ask Rudy and Brandy. They've been quiet for a little while. The first question is that I think it goes back to the previous question, and perhaps I can state it in this way. There needs to be greater tolerance, according to the caller, all around. Quote-unquote straight people who are following a traditional path should recognize and understand that people are different, and on the other hand, people who have not followed that path should also recognize that there are people who have their moral and their religious and so on perspectives which also need to be recognized and appreciated and respected.
So the LGBTQI community has never asked that people change their personal beliefs in much the same way that people have beliefs about many other things in life, but those beliefs, as Katie was alluding to earlier, are circumscribed by our constitution and the laws that govern our existence. And if your belief in any form or fashion seeks to deny another human being in the country from accessing their basic human rights, then those beliefs are actually circumscribed by other laws. So you can keep your beliefs, and we respect your right to have your beliefs, but where we draw the line is when some of your heterosexual colleagues try to use those beliefs to tell us that we should change how we articulate ourselves and what we need to live as equitable citizens. That's where the line is drawn.
I hear you saying, Rudy, that there needs to be greater appreciation and tolerance.
If we go back to stigma and discrimination, and this is where we started, the trans persons, the stigma and discrimination that the trans community faces is totally, is so much more compared to what the other persons of the community faces, because there's still employment for a lesbian and a gay man, but is there any employment for a trans woman or a trans male who identifies to be trans male or female? There's none. If the less privileged trans person don't do sex work, how would they survive? And these are the challenges and these are the issues. And, you know, when I'm trying to understand everyone's point of view and I'm trying to deal with everything, you know, in a real nice manner, but when coming to think about it, I have to remember the community that is unemployed and that has the same bills like you and I every day. As they get up in the morning, it's breakfast, it's lunch, it's dinner, it's clothes, you know, it's traveling, it's everything, it's rent to pay. And how do these people survive, and who are, you know, working alongside these persons? And, you know, I don't get that. I'm not getting that in the conversation in terms of, you know, when we're talking about people in general. Trans people, that's why my conversation started with trans rights, because it's totally different from the LGBTI rights. Because my issues and challenges is a lot more in terms let's say sexual and reproductive health. It's not just HIV. It's a lot more. Okay. And these are the things that is not even being asked about.
All right, so we're going to go to a break. You know, we are talking about political parties and being presented with agendas. I have a question for Rudy that you raised a little bit earlier on, and we're going to come back to it about what do people in the hierarchy of political parties, how do they react to somebody from one of the communities in their presence, in their midst, as it were, articulating and so on. Really, I'm going to ask you that in a moment, but we have to go to a break now, and we're going to come back. Okay, welcome back to the discussion, and this is your time to continue sending your comments, asking questions, making statements. We just ask, as we've been doing, respect on all sides. I will ensure here that you are respected, and you have to ensure us that you don't get cut off, because if you disrespect, you will get cut off. A question I have for you, Rudy, and this is in keeping with the theme of today about political parties. You were articulating that you are a member of the COP inside, as the politicians say, inside the bowels of the COP. What is the kind of reaction that you get from the political leadership? Or talk about the particular experience. What was the kind of reaction that you got as a gay person inside the political organization?
So, I, 9 out of 10 times, identify almost immediately what my sexuality is. It's part of me. I don't hide from it. I never have. So, in that experience, one of the things that drew me to the COP was, as Ronelle said, they had publicly, in their manifestos, had a position of equity and equality. So, going in, I believe that many of them knew that these were some of the issues that they chose to deal with. And the response was mostly respectful. But of course, amongst the membership, you would find people, even in a party like that, that was supposed to be forward-thinking, etc., had their own personal positions. The leadership, and this is ironically one of the challenges that I had with the party and why I resigned eventually, etc. And what I have with other parties is that leadership of political parties, they tend to take the populist point of view and to speak out of two sides of their mouths. So, because what they're trying to do is, of course, amass support from as many people as possible.
Yeah.
So, to me personally and the other members of the party who are of the LGBTQI community or allies, they would say, yes, we are going to implement policies, we are going to pass this legislation. And then, at the same time, they would tell the others, well, we want to support them, but maybe it's not our highest priority. So it's a way of placating both sides.
And it's a central question, which is the following question, that how will political leaders react to... as problems with. In other words, so that a PNM or UNC or COP or whoever might say, well, privately, I agree, you know, I have no discriminatory views against you and so on, but will they be brave enough to take that on board during an election campaign? Zico.
The major parties that have coalition, that have built these large coalitions that Rudy has described, the answer, I believe, right now is no. But what we are seeing right now that I think is very promising, there's a lot of smaller or third parties being formed, and a lot of these brand new parties, whether it be the Progressive Party with Nikolai Edwards, I just read about the MSJ as well, Movement for Social Justice. So a lot of the third party options that are out there are giving more full-throated endorsements of different aspects of LGBTQI.
But they're not likely to get in power for the next 25, 50 years.
Birthday, Tony.
Well,
let me hear Brandy Rodriguez before we go to the telephone.
I think this is my thing was to incorporate or collaborate diversity training and to make sure that the education is out there and in terms, because being visible is one, but having people to understand who you are is another thing and what your needs are. I think there's a lot of a disconnection with society and trans people because they think trans women are drag queens. You know, then from the LGBTI community, trans women are women. We have the same challenges and needs, just like every other woman.
But I suppose the stigma of being drag queen, has come from some of the behaviors that you associate with trans people.
Yeah. There is some kind of similarities, but as I say, if we have to go further, it must be about that diversity training and that collaboration.
So the question is, and let me get one response from everybody here, and the direct question is, do you feel that politicians and their parties will be sufficiently brave to develop an agenda of the LGBTQI community?
Trans people no longer willing to live in the shadows, so it's either you're doing it or you're not going to do it.
I have no faith in any of our major political parties ever getting the backbone required to face whatever populist backlash they're afraid of.
Yeah, Zico?
2020, no. 2030, it's very possible.
Yes. René?
I would say no, because I think that all political parties really are run and fueled by community support. But the community itself isn't inclusive and understanding of diversity, and they themselves, not just us, but the community doesn't understand it enough to push that and ask their leaders to be more inclusive, then it wouldn't happen.
And then you have another group of people who are very influential, the 1%ers of this world. And I'm not pointing my fingers at any particular ethnic group. I'm saying the people who fund political parties, those corporate entities might say, hands off. We don't want to touch you, but let's go to the telephone line, Aisha.
Caller, are you there?
Yes, hello. I have let me say, I am in full support, but I had one problem, and I'm going to give it a scenario, and that is marriage. Here's why. Suppose a guy is married, the next guy, and then boom, they probably separate. He goes off, he gets a wife, they have children, he dies. The husband, because he has equal rights, is entitled to the estate and money. What happens to the kid by law? And that's my main problem with this whole thing.
That's
all the laws can be equal.
About the children of progress.
Basically, the same thing that happens between men and women everywhere.
That is not an issue.
Yeah.
Oh. Good afternoon to you.
Hi, caller.
If you make
that. Hi, good afternoon. Hello?
Yes, go ahead, please. Speak up.
Hi, yes. I want to find out, why do gay men want to be healed more and some more feminine than a woman?
So why are gay men, why do feminine gay men exist?
Well, okay, a lot of, not all gay men are extremely feminine, right? So what tends to happen is the gay men who are not as feminine will generally not have to confront their sexuality very early, and they spend a lot of time misleading a lot of young women. As for those who are more feminine, it doesn't start off because they're trying to be super feminine. Sometimes it's something they just don't have that much control over. Some men have high-pitched voices. Some men find themselves moving in a way that is considered more effeminate. And it doesn't always start from a place of they're going above and beyond to be in-your-face feminine. Now, what happens over time as people become more comfortable with themselves, they learn to embrace this side of themselves, things that people used to laugh at them for and say it's shameful or ugly. As you get older and you become more self-confident and you learn to love yourself, you embrace this aspect of yourself and perhaps you may become more feminine. But it doesn't start from a performative place. It never does.
Yeah. I like that explanation because it explains to people out there, and I can understand what she's saying, because there are people in the community who go outside of themselves to be as feminine as they possibly can. But I like your explanation for it. We have another caller on the line. Good afternoon to you, caller. Hello.
Hello. Good afternoon.
Yes, caller, speak up.
What I would like to ask the guy, when he said they have problems like every other woman, what kind of problem? Do we have menstrual problems?
Is menstrual problems she is?
Menstrual. She has
menstrual
people already. No. Brandy was the one.
There are only two. Other than Tony, there are only two men at this table.
I won't answer.
Brandy, you are very strong-headed about how you want to be defined, aren't you?
Yeah, and I think the message is out there, and the respect has to be given. I'm not looking for people to tolerate, but I want respect.
Yeah. We have another call on the line. Good afternoon to you, caller.
Not just yet.
So we're kind of winding down now. Out of the series of questions I asked a moment ago, whether or not you, one of them being whether or not the supporters of political parties will allow them to take a gay agenda on board. The question is, if you don't, somebody said 2030, 2040, that kind of thing. If they are not going to respond positively to the communities, then what do you do?
So, interestingly, I think we have to be as objective as we can be. I mean, it's a little difficult for us. We get in our emotions, sometimes get in the way. Different administrations have treated in a piecemeal way with some of the concerns of the community. As I said before, even the police commissioner has identified it. The former prime minister spoke about it. There was some movement with the gender policy, then it backtracked. This current government, the attorney general, has come out, and even the president, the prime minister, have all said that LGBTQI citizens deserve equal rights. I want to say that I'm a little bit more hopeful than my colleagues in that I have been engaging with communities and engaging with different political parties. It's not something that I broadcast because I do think that the work has to be done on the ground level. First, if Pride proved anything, and they have admitted this, some of the people in parties that are in leadership roles, is that they realized that the backlash isn't as as frightening as they thought it might have been. And I think that is one of
so
the...
So what do you do to give them the confidence to come forward and accept an agenda from the community?
So it's by having sessions like these, continuing to spotlight the positive contribution of the gay community to Trinidad development. As I said earlier, Carlisle Chang developed the national flag. There are many others who contribute to society. And we have to engage the wider community and do it in a way that they can see and feel comfortable. And it shouldn't have to be like this, but we have, as I said, to be objective. We have to work with what we are given. So what we are going to do is actually between now and the next election, and I'm pulling the cat out of the bag, as it were, is... We are Pride is planning a series of public activities that will invite and bring together communities, supporters of political parties and the community, and let them once and for all give their position, because it will not only reflect on their position on LGBT rights, but really human rights.
Brandy Rodriguez, what is to be done? That's the central question.
We need to have a lot of more sensitization and support for human rights. And that is something that has to work for our community to exist and to collaborate with government in that, that sort of a way, because it is necessary now that human rights is on the agenda.
Katie?
So I agree with the education perspective. I just want to point out that I think something that people don't really think about is the fact that there are gay people, LGBT people everywhere. We are teachers, we are doctors, we are lawyers, we are accountants, we work in FIFA, we work in KFC. We are your neighbors, your families, and your friends. And I think that is a good starting point for education, because people don't consider that we are actually here and we are living with you.
Yeah, so what do you do in the circumstances?
Education.
Education. How and in what form this education is?
Information. It could be actual structural education, where as part of the HSLE curriculum, you include information about the LGBT community.
And incidentally, has the Ministry of Education, not necessarily this one alone, but ministries over the period, have they accepted or have you approached the ministry to take on an agenda?
We have approached businesses and also the ministries with education, not just Queer Corner, but the different organizations, CAISO, Friends for Life, Silver Lining. And one of the obstacles we face, one is being able to have the students actually participate, because parents can always say, no, we don't want our child participating in a sensitization event. And of course, with the Concordat, board schools are able to make their own call on whether or not they want to have those sorts of programs within their school.
Ziku?
So, people fear what they do not understand. So, the LGBTQ community has two major focuses right now, which one is visibility, but we have to also to understand that not everybody has the privilege to be visible. So, those of us, such as Rudy or myself, who do enjoy that privilege, we try to use it as much as possible to educate and to make sure that people have the opportunity to know that there are already LGBTQI people in their lives. What tends to happen is that the minute people realize that there is already an LGBTQI person in their life, suddenly, over time, their views soften. And that's how we've gotten from where 10 years ago you said people might be waiting outside your door right now to cuss you out, to where we are today, where this is a conversation that we can have on radio for what hasn't been the entire day or the past 2 hours.
Yeah.
That's how we got to where we are today, and that's how we're going to get to the next step in 2030, which is when I believe it is going to become a mainstream issue that the two major political parties are going to be willing to tackle.
Okay.
And you have a particular focus which, now that I contemplate it, it's vital. You're talking about children in school.
Yes.
You're talking about 8-year-olds, 9-year-olds, and so on, and the kind of difficulties they face.
Yes. So like I mentioned before, a lot of mental health issues do come up from bullying, right? So I think that we need to take these things into consideration, not only physical perception, but also to how we protect our minds, how we protect the minds and the well-being of young persons who will grow up to be the future of the nation. I mean, I don't have to come here on radio and say that. We know this, right? So I think that politicians need to recognize that inclusion and protection and acknowledge human rights as opposed to LGBTI rights, because it is part and parcel of women's rights. LGBT rights are all part of human rights. And I don't think that anyone in our country could stand and say, I don't support human rights. Because we all want to be treated equally. We all want to be acknowledged for who we are. And it's the same goes for women, people of marginal communities, people of different ethnic groups, people of the LGBTI community. So as opposed to really pushing this idea of tolerance, I think we need inclusion, protection, safety, and an acknowledgement and an open-mindedness about diversity.
I presume that the group works with parents.
Yes.
Parents of children who are discriminated against.
We currently have an ongoing intake of parents through our Stronger Families project, where we try to sensitize and have discussions with professional psychologists about how these parents could better understand sexuality, gender diversity, and identity, and so on. So they could actually
difficult obstacles for parents to deal with.
It is very difficult, but we have taken on that task. So you could always, you know, log onto our Facebook page, Instagram, send us a message if you are a parent and you would like to be part of this program, the Stronger Families Initiative.
Aisha is going to have the last say in terms of a piece of music that she has selected.
Okay. Ross, I'm coming out.
Good pick.